for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see.
Welcome back to Life Matters. Oh, am I enjoying this part of our time with April. You know, if you're just joining us, we've been talking to April Zlatnik about her time. You know, it is hard to hear about kids being hurt, kids being terrified to even be alive. But I'm excited that we've been through that with her already tonight. And our hearts have been touched, and boy, we're on the other side. And we're hearing about the incredible time that she had with her first foster home, which, by the way, also was her last foster home, which is incredible. In fact, April, I was talking to my daughter, Sierra, about you earlier today, and I mentioned your story, and she said she was in the same foster home for 5 years. Wow, that seems like that never happens. And I said, wow, yeah, unfortunately, many kids, due to no fault of their own, are bounced around. You know, I just got an email a couple of days ago about the sibling group, and it said, this little girl has been in this home since she was a newborn, and she was about 3 by now, and then her siblings, and the foster home was closing, and so that's why they needed a home. I just thought, oh my gosh, this child, as a newborn, is now 3, and then her siblings as well. That's the only family they know. And yet they're having to move because the foster home is closing for whatever reason. Like, oh, that is awful. I mean, my little one is 16 months, and he can't even be away from me in the nursery at church. That's not something I'm happy about, but it's true. And so I can only imagine the trauma those little children go through, and all these children that are moved. So I'm so grateful, and I know you are too, that once you got, your life would have just been so much harder. Can you imagine if you had been there, you were so happy, and getting someone to cook with you, and just to even have a normal family was like heaven. And then what if you had to move 6 months to a year? How do you think that would have made you feel? What would have been the repercussions?
I would have survived it primarily because of my faith, because I knew the Lord was with me no matter what, but it would have been excruciating. And, you know, a year and a half ago, you're talking about kids who end up getting moved, and I know that I had one of the best circumstances probably out there, period. But I just remember meeting a year and a half ago a young lady who ended up, by the time she was 18, from the time she was 9 until she was 18, she had been in 59 different placements.
Oh my gosh.
And I was shocked that you could be in so many placements in such a short period of time, let alone having a young person actually be in that situation.
And this really, one of the saddest things about that is after the first several, sometimes it is, quote, the child's fault. I mean, not really, but that's their behavior is the reason that people give, well, now she's doing this. But what happens that people really need to understand is that after a couple of moves in the child or the teenager, they begin to believe, which is really not unfounded. Obviously, yeah, wherever I go, I'm not going to stay. So since they're going to get rid of me anyways, I might as well just do whatever I got to do, because it will be even more painful and harder if I stay here for months or a year and then I leave, because I will leave anyways. And so then they really act, quote, bad, and they have, quote, behaviors. And then the new foster family says, oh, yeah, this isn't what we were wanting, or we just want to have a child to help, but we didn't want somebody who does this. And then she has to leave, and then the whole thing starts over again. So the answer to that is that you have to have a family that's strong enough to say, this is the end of the line. I am so sorry that you've moved 5, 10, 15 times. And you know what? You need a family to be there for you, and so I'm going to be it. And don't let this child scare you off. They're going to do the kids that have been hurt like this, they'll do everything they can, even though it's subconscious. In their mind, they're not thinking, usually, I'm going to leave, so let me just do what I can. But in their it's a protective mechanism to not be hurt more. So let me just reject you before you reject me. Let me get out of your home before I get really settled. I don't want to get used to this home and this school, and then you're going to kick me out anyways, so I might as well just kick me out now. Do the things that I think you're going to make me leave regardless. So there has to be parents strong enough to say, nope. Oh, wow, I really didn't appreciate it when you called me a B word and a this and this and this, and the fact that you're kicking your door. Yep, let's not do that. In fact, that's going to, but that's going to cost you this and this. But when you're calm, let's go take a walk to the park. You clearly have a lot of energy. Let's go walk down there and do the basketball. And I love you anyways. And so I'm not saying that, that most foster children behave like that, but some do. And it's usually because they've been so hurt. They just don't know how to handle their feelings. And you've just got to have strong people that will love them through to wholeness and to healing. And so that poor girl, 59 placements, her heart must just be broken and have nobody stuck it out with her to say, I'm your family. Because, you know, our biological kids, I would hope most of our listeners, no matter what they do, it's like, you're my child. I'm not happy with what you just did, but we're clearly going to work through it. And them leaving is not a consequence. Getting kicked out of your home is really not a consequence in most healthy families, right? You get grounded. You can't use your Xbox or you can't go play with your friends. It's not, you lose your home and you're a stranger to me. I'll never see you again. And that's what happens to these kids. I'm glad you brought that up because you could have been one of those kids. You could have been somewhere and then the next place and your behavior goes down because of what I described in the next place. And by the time you're 18, you're just worn out and exhausted and you don't have a family and you don't even have a family to show for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, in addition to what you're saying, one thing that really came to mind is just how parents, when you choose to be a foster parent, you just, your heart is invested in this child and you want it to work out, but you can't take things personally. You just really can't. It's not about you. It's just the child reacting to everything that came before you. And just like when you want to have a successful marriage, you go into marriage thinking divorce isn't an option. When you do foster care or adoption, you got to have that same mentality, okay? Mm-hmm. Separation from you is not an option if it's in my power to control
it. Yes. That's so powerful. And it's true because when you have that confidence that, you know, we're going to, the parent has to be the calm one. The parent has to be the one going, we're in this together. I'm here for you. We're going to make this work. And then the child can see that. But if the parent's going, I don't really know if this is going to work. And I don't know if this kid's going to stay here. Then they start to withdraw their attention and their love. And then the child feels more abandoned and rejected. And then it starts this whole cycle. Mm-hmm. Who can change the cycle? God and the parent. So the parent needs to call on God and say, oh God, help me. This child or this teenager is really driving me batty, but give me a supernatural love from you. Because sometimes it requires a beyond our natural love when kids are acting very unlovely. But it doesn't matter. We know that they have a great purpose and a great destiny in life. We know that God means for their heart to be healed and for them to have a family. And they can go on to do great things, to be great parents one day, to be a great contributing member to society. But they really need parents to hang in there with them, whether they be relatively young and easy. Let's say some people think, oh, like a 2 and 4 year old, or if they're a teenager, it doesn't matter. Whoever they are, they need a family and we want them to have it. And I know you do too, because that's why you're visiting with us today. And so with Molly, and we're going to be doing part two soon, because we want to hear your advice for foster parents. You've already given us some hints as to what that might be. But with Molly, what were some other things that she did to really make you feel at home? Because that's another thing. When you move into a stranger's place, it's very uncomfortable to not feel like it's your home. So what can we do to make these children feel at home? And what advice would you give?
You know, Molly was so proactive. And that's definitely a huge thing I recommend, is being proactive. But she was so proactive, I knew she was really considering me. I knew she thought about me. I knew that I was so important to her that she would run home out on her one-hour lunch break from her already hectic schedule to pack for me a little snack bag in a paper, brown paper bag. So when I came home from school, I'd have a bunch of treats in the fridge waiting for me.
Aww.
I mean, it's just those little things that, you know, they seem so small, but they made the biggest difference. I remember when I was in high school wanting to go out with my friends, and she never made it a big deal about money. She's like, yeah, here's $20. Go have fun. And that, she really gave me my childhood back, because I didn't have to worry about money. I didn't have to worry about food. You know, she never yelled at me. I think we got into one big fight one time.
Which is pretty amazing, because you were there from 13 to 18. That's pretty awesome.
Well, she was an incredibly patient person. I'm not saying I was angelic. I'm just saying she was incredibly patient. But, you know, it's all those little thoughtful things that she did. And I remember our first Christmas together. Unfortunately, some of the gifts, she got kind of caught off guard, I think. And I don't know how it all worked out, but I ended up getting gifts that I didn't feel really demonstrated that she knew who I was. And I was horrified, but I went upstairs and cried. And I was so, like, scared that she would see me cry because I didn't want to hurt her feelings. Aww. And she knew that I cried and that the gifts really weren't gifts that spoke to me in particular. And so she ended up taking them back and a couple of days later coming up and just being open and honest and saying, you know, I didn't do the best there, but I'd like to give you these gifts instead. And those gifts really demonstrated, again, her thoughtfulness, that she really cared about who I was as a person. And it was just amazing that she was even humble enough to be willing to do that instead of getting angry and being like, oh, you ungrateful child.
Yes.
You know, she just had such a wonderful attitude the whole time through.
And, you know, people listening might think, well, that's kind of weird. Wasn't she just happy to get gifts? But it also goes back to your childhood, that fact that you were not noticed, that you were not appreciated, nobody really saw you. And so that probably tapped into in your heart, like, well, the whatever she got maybe was things you were not interested in at all. And so it probably did trigger something from your past. I mean, where if you hadn't have been through that, it probably wouldn't have made you cry. It wouldn't have, just like you said, it's not really about sometimes the circumstances. It ties into your past. And so it probably was a big part of, from where you came from, it tapped into more of that feeling of not being noticed and not being cared about, that another kid probably wouldn't even feel that.
And in addition to that, Mariah, you know, you gotta realize that when kids come from a broken home, usually there's that one black sheep who gets the brunt of the rejection. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see your siblings getting loved on to some degree around you, and sometimes all these other kids will have a relatively normal childhood and the parent will target just you for the abuse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for me, I was that target. I was the black sheep, and not only did I have to take care of my brother and sister through it and protect them from any, like, abuse, but I took the abuse, and even when I got into foster care and we had visitations with my mom, you know, she would lavish her attention on my brother and sister and completely ignore me.
That happens a lot, yes. And that must have been really painful. So every visit is not something you look forward to. And there is a part, I don't know if you experience this at your age, but most children hope that this time will be different. And so when they go to the visit, I hope that this time she will love me. I hope that this time she will see me and like me. And then your hopes are often dashed every time. And that's really painful.
Mm-hmm. It is. And so getting into foster care, it's just one of the most important things. Again, just reiterating that thoughtfulness that I know who you are. I value you as a person.
Oh, that's powerful. And we are out of time. I'm so glad you guys have been with us. We're going to hear so much more wisdom and experience from April very soon. Y'all have been listening to Life Matters on The Word 98.5 and 99.3. Thank you so much for being with us, April. I look forward to you being back on. We have much more to learn from you. Y'all come back tomorrow night. We'll be here. God bless you. Have a great night.
Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the...